protests against changes to the NDIS continue across Australia as people with disabilities push back against the reforms. The proposed changes would require Australians to prove their impairment is permanent and have exhausted all available medical treatments to qualify support under the scheme. But some academics argue this approach fails to recognise the fluctuating nature of many conditions and the complexity of living with multiple disabilities. To learn more about the impact of these changes, Powered Media reporter Emma Myers spoke with political sociologist Dr. Georgia Van Torn from the University of New South Wales.
So we now have a legal definition of functional capacity, which is around the essentially a person's ability to carry out an activity without help from others, without help from assistive technology or home modifications. So it's really focused on what that person can do in isolation. And there is actually a part of the legislation that now says that when the assessor and the assessment tool is being applied to measure functional capacity, that should happen without reference to the person's environment and personal circumstances, which is a real shift from what the disability sector and people with disability have long been arguing for, which is really an approach to needs assessment and the assessment of functional capacity and disability in a way that takes account of people's environment. Because as we know, disability is not just about one's body, one's physical experience of impairment, but it's also about how that impairment interacts with their environment, how that person goes about their daily life, in their home, in their community, what kinds of supports do they need to thrive in those different contexts.
What are some of the pitfalls that may threaten this framing of disability?
I guess the pitfall is that it doesn't do a very good job of capturing people's needs in a holistic and nuanced way. When people, the whole reason why people apply for support under the NDIS is so that they can receive the kinds of services, supports that enable them to live a full, dignified life, to achieve their goals, however that may be defined, whether that's about participating more in their local sporting club or whether it's just something simple like being able to move about independently and look after themselves in their own home with support. The benefits of a scheme like this is that it helps people achieve their personal goals with support and with funded support. And so I guess the pitfall is that if you don't take account of those goals and the context in which people actually live their lives, the supports they have available to them outside of the NDIS, but also the support they may not have available outside the NDIS, those sorts of contextual factors really matter in terms of properly assessing people's needs. Because after all, the aim of the scheme is to support people to live the best lives they can. And so in order to do that, you really need to take account of that person in a holistic way.
Changes to the ways or changes to who can actually access the scheme. What's your opinion on tightening the eligibility criteria?
A really important way in which the access to the scheme looks like it will be tightened is around the definition of what constitutes a permanent disability. Anyone applying for support under the NDIS has always had to demonstrate or prove that their disability is permanent, and they've had to also demonstrate that it has a significant impact on their functional capacity. They're the two kind of benchmarks that you have to meet in order to meet the eligibility criteria for the NDIS. Permanence is always dependent on whether a treatment could improve your impairment. So that's always been part of the assessment process. But what's changing is that the new rules actually tighten what counts as having exhausted all of those treatment options. So under the new rules, an impairment will only be considered permanent if further treatment is, and I'm quoting here from the actual legislation, is materially or is unlikely to materially improve, reverse, or alleviate the impact of the impairment. And the other thing that is significant with these changes in relation to this requirement to have exhausted all treatment options is that there's no consideration necessarily of the availability of those treatment options, right? So if you live in an area where the treatment is unaffordable or inaccessible, if you live in a rural or regional part of Australia, for example, where there aren't many treatment options available to you, that is not going to be taken into account. The wording is that an applicant must have tried all treatment commonly available in Australia, regardless of whether they can afford them or the actual availability of those treatments where they live.
Dr. Georgia Van Torn from UNSW there, speaking with Powered Media's Emma Myers.